Welcome. You're listening to the Fly Fishing Journeys podcast, live from the Fly Fishing Show in Pleasanton, California. Fly Fishing Journeys is proud to be broadcasting live from the event and having great conversations with many of the finest fly fishing and fly tying experts in the world. You can find these podcasts posted to our website, iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Play, and Facebook. To stay up to date with these and other Fly Fishing Journeys adventures, please be sure to follow and subscribe. Here's your host, Rob Giannino.
Thanks, Josh. And on this episode of the Fly Fishing Journeys podcast, we sit down with Brian O'Keefe, who is a world-class photographer and fly angler. Along with Todd Moen, he was instrumental in the creation of Catch Magazine, a spectacular photo and video-centric online magazine. You will often see Brian angling around the world as he's featured in many film festival films. Brian is passionate about helping people experience their dream fly fishing adventures and is doing that with 11 Experience. We caught up at the Pleasanton Fly Fishing Show and talked about topwater mousing for trout, the early days of fly fishing photography, a behind-the-scenes look at the making of these cool fly fishing films, and finally a peek into some amazing destination opportunities. I did want to pass along a couple announcements. Fly Fishing Journeys is heading to Iceland in 2020 for giant brown trout, Arctic char, and Atlantic salmon. And if you want to travel with us, head over to flyfishingjourneys.com and register for our newsletter and all the details. The annual International Fly Tying Symposium is taking place this November at the Sheraton Hotel in Parsippany, New Jersey. Many of the finest fly tiers in the world will be there tying just for you. You can find all the details at internationalflytyingsymposium.com. Before we get to the show, I want to thank our sponsors. The show season is coming soon. Visit flyfishingshow.com for all the time and location information. And finally, here's a short message from our favorite fly tying vice.
From the original prototype designed in the late 70s to our brand new legacy stainless steel vice released in 2018, Norvice has been committed to one thing: efficiency. Tie better flies faster. A long-standing slogan with the company truly encompasses what the Norvice fly tying system does. What it means is to tie a fly in less time and more consistently due to the ease and benefits engineered into this outstanding system. For more information, please visit www.nor-vice.com. Norvice, the most innovative fly tying system on the market.
Thank you, Josh. And I am more than excited to have Brian O'Keefe on the podcast. Brian's first photo was published at the age of 16, and he's had over 1,000 since. He's worked retail. He's guided in Oregon and Alaska. He was a manufacturer's rep for over 20 years. And then, along with Todd Moen, started Catch Magazine, a digital magazine which includes both the digital and the signature Catch Magazine videos. Brian, thanks for being on the podcast.
Hey, my pleasure, Rob.
It's absolutely great to have you. Now, it's funny, Brian, because the Catch Magazine videos are just spectacular, but you're kind of known for this signature walking. When you're always where you get your hat, I just see you kind of walking from your one spot to the next, or even getting out of your tent in the morning and walking to your first fishing destination. And I think that's kind of a signature of you walking.
Yeah, we just love doing that. Todd and I are both, you know, real grounded, simple guys that fish our local waters, but we also get the opportunity to do videos and other photo essays and things all over the world, but we still sort of take the local guy's attitude of wading, walking, sometimes biking, canoeing. We like to have just sort of a fun, every guy can do this kind of experience.
Yeah, and I just love that because, you know, when I see in these videos, you're always moving and the music that goes with the walking, it just kind of starts to that build up of, I wonder where he's going. I wonder what he's going to fish for.
Yeah. We really like doing that. But, you know, Todd is well known for his videos. In his film, actual camera work is second to none. But as an editor, he's a genius. But then he syncs in the music so well, better than really anyone in the business. But what people don't know about Todd is he's an awesome caster, great angler. He was a guide in Alaska and Montana, so he brings that experience to behind the camera, so he really knows what he's getting and what he's doing.
What is your roles here? I know you're very busy here at the shows. I see you always doing casting and you have talks. So what are your roles here at the show, Brian?
Well, I do quite a few different things. So one would be to work at my booth, which is 11 Experience, a new travel and lodge company. But then I'll also do casting demos on the pond and seminars in the theaters. We usually try to pick topics that relate to general areas. So in the Northwest, I might do Alaska. And in Denver, I might do stuff on Baja or the Bahamas. I just like to do what they want me to do, but I really enjoy the casting demos an awful lot.
What are some of the things you talk about during your casting demonstrations?
Well, they usually sign me up for either distance, wind, or casting big flies, which all boils down to power, having a good double haul. And so just, I try not to overkill with too much information. So I do three or four important tips on getting more power or more distance in your casting.
Okay. So if somebody wanted to learn about how to get more distance in their casting, they should probably come to one of the fly fishing shows.
Oh, yeah. In fact, whether it's the casting or the theater seminars, there's so much information inside this building that a person should never come to the show for one day. You should do a day to walk around, a day to do the hands-on clinics like the casting and the tying, and then really another day in all the seminar theater presentations that are mind-boggling. So much talent here that's free once you get in. It would take years and years and years to get even a tiny smidgen of the information you can get here in one day.
Yeah, it's awesome. It's a great show. And this is my first time at the Pleasanton show. Pleasanton, California. We're on show number 6 of 7. Just an incredible show here in Pleasanton because it's inside and outside.
Yeah. Oh, they got the good weather here too. So people can walk around without raincoats. I saw you in Boston and New Jersey where it was snowing. In fact, it was 1 degrees in Boston. So,
yeah.
You know, it's kind of nice to be here. The hills are green and people are really antsy to get out.
Yeah. And they have an outdoor casting pond.
Yeah.
It was funny because you always used to seeing the casting ponds that are indoors. And I was sitting with Ben, the director, last night. And it's like, hey, did you guys, this like an outdoor casting pond? He says, I said, there's an outdoor pond. He says, Rob, most ponds are outdoors.
Yeah, right. I once told someone to practice casting on a dock with water on both sides. And he said, really? What's a dock with water on one side?
I never saw that before. Well, that's pretty wild. So the latest at the IF4 that you and Todd submitted and it was accepted for the film festival was Mousing for Trout up in Alaska. It's a great little video.
Oh, yeah. And that was so much fun to make because it's all top water. So you're casting into log jams and around overhanging trees. And you can see the rainbow come up. It's big, aggressive takes, or they'll hit and miss, and you can put it right back. They hit it again, sometimes 2 or 3 times. So visually, it's just really cool with a backdrop of Alaska, you know, moose and eagles and all that cool stuff. So you combine an amazing experience with that kind of fishing and visual surface action. That was really one of our most fun to make. And, you know, it's on the Aniak River, and that's a place where there's only one lodge, Aniak River Lodge. You fly in there, you've got the whole river to yourself, and they have all 5 species of salmon, char, grayling, rainbows, sheafish, and pike. So it's a fisherman paradise, and to make a video or shoot photos, you can't go wrong.
So you've been shooting photography for quite some time. Your first photo published, 16 years old. Tell me about some of your photo work.
Yeah, you know, I got into it early because my parents didn't believe I actually caught fish when I would go fishing, so they gave me that little Kodak Instamatic camera.
Okay.
And so by the time spring rolled around after Christmas, I started taking pictures of my fish, and they were blown away that I really wasn't lying. Ever since then, I took a camera fishing with me. In fact, that little Instamatic, as crummy of a little camera as that was, but it was simple. That went to New Zealand with me in 1973 when I was 19, and then I just realized I needed a better camera and saved up, but it was only $100. And got a little Minolta and started shooting slide film and was fortunate to be in great places like New Zealand and Alaska and fishing all over Oregon. I got some nice shots. I thought they were pretty good. And then one day when I was working retail at a sporting goods store, a magazine editor who I knew walked in and we started talking photos. And he asked me to bring down a few the next day. We looked at them and he took a bunch back to the office in Portland. That was Frank Amato Publications. They've got several magazines. And he bought 3 or 4 for covers. And then ever since then, it's a hobby out of control. I do photography and fishing side by side. I think they pair up just perfectly.
Yeah. What type of camera do you use?
Right now I'm shooting mostly Canon gear, although I have to admit my iPhone 8 Plus is a really good camera.
You like that? Yeah.
Quite a bit. Yeah.
I'm looking at getting a mirrorless, the new mirrorless.
Right.
Sony makes one.
TacSharp. Really nice stuff.
I'm trying to figure out which one. I'm actually waiting. Tim Flagler suggested I wait if I wanted to do video for the Sony A3S. which is going to be the new Sensitive.
Yeah, it should be really, really nice.
S for Sensitive, and it's supposed to have like 8K.
Wow, nice. So, yeah, that'll be really, really clear, super sharp. Yeah, we, you know, when I was with Catch Magazine, because I'm just a contributor now, I helped Todd. I got fish photos from all over the world. I probably looked at more fishing photography than anybody in the world all day long. And the stuff that I saw coming through a Sony camera was really, really well done.
Yeah, I'm right now I'm shooting in Canon. I don't have the best camera. It's the 7D,
That's fine.
Okay camera. But I'm shooting a good glass. I have two L-series lenses.
Yeah.
So trying to, you know, make that switch. I just think that Sony right now is taking a big jump in this mirrorless and for video, for sure, because otherwise I'd have to get into like a 5D Mark III, which is a big camera.
Yeah, that's what I shoot. It's big. You have to be dedicated to it. You know, big waterproof case, lenses, flash, everything in there. It's about a 20-pound, you know, ball and chain wherever you go. But and it's expensive, so you have to be really careful with it and plan your stuff out. That's why I like having, you know, it in a boat or in the truck or something. But as I'm wading, especially steelheading or something that's difficult wading, I usually have an Olympus Tough in my vest or wader pocket, and that's, you can drop it, you can get it wet. I've even lost it and then come back and found it when there's ice on the water and chipped it out of the ice with a rock, and it still worked and turned on. So Olympus Tough for a couple $100 is a great little pocket camera.
That's a great story. Tell me about your relationship with Todd.
Okay, we go way back. When Todd was in high school, he frequented a fly shop in Issaquah, Washington called Creekside, and I was a sales rep, so I was dropping in there every couple months and got to know Todd a little bit as just a kid, really. He's 44, maybe. I'm 64. And even back then in high school and stuff, he shot these, you know, old Super 8s or whatever they were back in the day. And he was always making these little fishing films, and they were kind of good for a high school kid. So I got to know him a little bit. And then he went to college in Montana, and he did graphics, film, and that sort of thing, and internet information. So,
and for those listeners who don't know, we mentioned at the beginning here, but it's Todd Moen of Catch Magazine.
Yeah. Yeah, it's actually a little funny because he was shooting for like an ESPN-type fishing show all over the world. And then they had a little plane crash in the Bahamas, and I think he just got married, and he thought, you know, this isn't my future, and it wasn't very creative. So he quit, and he was living in Bend, Oregon at the time, and I had been doing about 22 years as a rep, and then around 2007 and 8, when the economy crashed, I was almost losing money doing my job, so I quit, and we just kind of teamed up at coffee shops and brew pubs and came up with this idea for Catch Magazine, and we just launched it, and away we went. And it grew and became very popular, and it's still doing great.
Yeah, so for those listeners who may not know about Catch Magazine, it's this digital magazine. You open it up, you get it as a link?
Well, yeah, you can subscribe, and then it just comes into your inbox, and you open it up, and it's a page-turning
process
online magazine. That, and because it's online, you can have slideshows and videos and lots of links with our advertisers to their websites. It's very handy. It's very easy to navigate. But it's dedicated to fly fishing film and photography. So, well, I should say video and photography. So we have the best photographers in the world. And then Todd's videos in each issue. And it's a little bit of a virtual vacation, you know, every other month. And people really look forward to seeing it.
Yeah, I remember when I got the first one, and I was like blown away at the quality of the imagery of the photos. And I'm an imagery and photos guy. For me, it's the imagery, it's the design, it's the graphic, it's the video, it's the photo. And then unfortunately, last for me is the content. I mean, I like the content, I read it, but I like the big bold descriptions.
Oh, yeah. Everybody does.
To try to read down and read every word, that's not me per se. If it looks good, if it feels good, then I like that product. Yeah. And I think Catch Magazine really captures that.
Yeah, it would be like a coffee table book presentation online. And so the photography is just beautiful, and Todd's videos are awesome. And it's just real easy. You know, you can turn it off, turn it on. It lasts forever. It's never going to go out of, it's not going to disintegrate. You know, it's going to be around as long as there's internet.
So you can always go back to it.
Yeah, and if people want to check it out, it's catchmagazine.net.
What is the making of a issue of Catch Magazine? Tell us about the making of an issue.
Yeah, so Todd and I would, again, I'm not a half owner of Catch anymore, but I want to help Todd. I'm his biggest cheerleader. But in the day, we had our division of labor, and he was sort of the brains of the company. So he made it, he did all the online, all the internet, all the coding to make it work, actually physically work. I gathered content. So I would contact photographers in New Zealand and Ireland and Brazil, Alaska, Vermont, and get great photo essays lined up for each issue, get their submission, edit all the photos, meaning to size and to fit. We would add captions on each. We would have a little intro of every photo essay so people know what they're looking at, and a little finish at the end of contact the photographer. And then we would put ads in different spaces throughout the whole magazine. And then I would give all that content to Todd, and then he would run it through his systems to make it so it actually appears and comes in a page-to-page format. And then, of course, he's got his awesome videos in there, too.
Yeah. And so who are some of the people that write for Catch Magazine?
Well, I would have to correct you a little bit. We have photographers, not very many writers. So
okay, it's not a lot of articles,
not much text at all. So
perfect for me.
Yeah, exactly. We have a lot of pro photographers that come to us with beautiful stuff. Our Valentine Atkinson, and the list goes on and on. In fact, we always look for new up-and-coming photographers too, because basically everybody's a photographer now,
right?
And people have great blogs, and they're going through Instagram and all this stuff, and there's some really beautiful stuff out there who these people aren't really, you know, directing towards the magazines or to other ways of presentation. And so Catch to them looks like a gallery they can hang their photos in.
So
it's really fun working with someone new who might get their very first exposure. And then from there, you know, we've had guys email back and say, hey, you know that picture that was in Catch Magazine? Saab bought it, or Chevy bought it, or someone bought it. It's really neat to make that connection for people, especially the new guys.
That's incredible. Well, how would somebody, do you have like a photo submission process?
Yeah, if you go to catchmagazine.net, you'll see a place where you can submit or contact Todd and his wife, Kelly. They'll check out your stuff and then talk about how you want to present it and that sort of thing.
It's really, really beautiful. Well, let's talk about the movies now, because the Catch Magazine signature videos, there's like this incredible signature style that Todd has in the making of his movies. When you're watching it, you instantly know that this is a Todd Moen production.
Yeah, because he doesn't have a jiggly camera. He carries around a 30 or 40 pound tripod all over the boonies, and we really go out in the boonies. And then he's got a pack, and inside the pack are batteries and other things that he needs. But he's a one-man band, so he'll do all the camera work. And we're not talking some giant Hollywood camera. This is an over-the-counter, you know, Panasonic camera that has to be tough, but it can't be real big or complicated. We've got to move fast, be nimble, go through log jams, you know, in and out of all the worst weather and conditions imaginable. So he's fast, nimble, quick. He's like a billy goat with a camera, and he's up on cliffs, and he's down using his underwater gear, or he's flying his drone. And then, you know, we go in at night and we talk about what we got, how our storyline is sort of developing, because we want to have a little message in each film. It's not a how-to video, how to read water, how to tie flies, how to cast. We show beautiful places, good fishing, and fun. But we want to have a lot, you know, like you mentioned, how we walk to places or do that. We want to have a neat little storyline of how to get to this wilderness spot, and then things just evolve and happen. Then we take people on a little journey, just like you do. So we talk about it at night. We'll look at some of the stuff we get. We'll tweak things a little bit, but then we just get back out and we fish all day, film all day. But then when it's all said and done, Todd's true magic comes through as an editor, because he blends it all together into this neat storyline, adds the music, and then when he's done, yeah, you can say, yeah, that's a Todd Moen film, because it's tack sharp, no jiggly camera. It's not silly. We don't make fun of people. We don't make fun of the sport. We really respect the sport, actually. So it has a long-lasting appeal to people, and it's interesting because some of his videos have over 2 million views. And in fly fishing, I think a successful video is about 30,000 views. But when you're into the millions or 2 millions, you're into a stratospheric, never-seen-before quality that's basically, in Catch Magazine, it's $12 a year. You get 6 videos a year plus the magazine. Or a lot of his stuff is on YouTube. You could go to Todd Moen YouTube channel, Todd Moen Creative, and you could just watch dozens of them. It's a great way to pass time.
And you had mentioned one that had this millions of views was the Alpine Bass.
Right, yeah.
Tell us about the Alpine Bass.
Okay, well, that was really fun to make. It's one of our earlier films, and we had I'm going to tell you, I bet our budget for that movie was under $100. And it was just a tank of gas, and we went up to a public fly fishing only lake in Oregon. They might have camped out one night or something, but it was a wade bass popper show. So I'm wading around, and these are big bass. They're 3 to 6 pound bass, and they're hammering these poppers. So Todd has these close up attacks on the popper, blowing up big fish. You know, it's just everyone wants to be that guy.
Yeah.
You know, wading shoals of reeds and grass, popping bugs, no people, big fish. Who doesn't want to do that?
Yeah.
So I think it appealed to a lot of people. Consequently, it's probably the number one viewed fly fishing video of all time.
It's incredible. Tell us about how you go ahead and set up your camera shots. I mean, you have the tripod. Do you use a gimbal?
Oh, yeah. Todd's got all the latest and greatest, really nice stuff. But it's got to be portable, too, because like you mentioned, we walk, you know, or we've canoed, or we've used little Honda 90 trail bikes. We like to use kind of funky modes of transportation, but hardly ever a big fancy boat. We never use super nice fishing boats, even though they're great to fish out of. It just sort of takes the down-to-earth part out of it.
Yeah, the DIY.
Yeah. So everything Todd uses, he has to carry. But, you know, any films, because I was involved in ski films too, it's slow going. It's hurry up and wait. You know, the sun's behind a cloud. Let's take 10, 20, maybe an hour. We adapt to the weather. We adapt to the conditions. And we don't have such a tight set format that the weather would screw us up.
Right.
If it's bad, then we change themes a little bit. So we're just very adaptable and can be creative and move with the situation.
Now, when you're on a multi-day trip, are you watching your footage at night? Do you start downloading the footage even that night, or do you wait to download everything at the end of the trip?
It's mostly all at the end. A lot of places where we go, there's not much electricity. So we've got to be careful with our batteries, or we just don't have the ability to preview any shot material. But generally speaking, Todd knows what he's getting. And we hardly ever have a real big boo-boo of, oh my God, that something was wrong, or, you know, something we would have to delete or cut. When Todd's shooting, he's kind of got a track running in his brain of how it's progressing and the continuity of how it's going to flow in the end. And
right.
He's just brilliant at that stuff.
Yeah, so it's more than like he's just a cameraman. He's a director. He's kind of being the director and the cameraman at the same time.
And the sound guy and the everything guy. And, you know, he buys the music that's in the films. You know, a lot of fly fishing videos are just bootleg AC/DC off a CD or something. So, but Todd works with companies that sell kind of soundtrack type music, and everything's legal and legit. And that's the only way to go, in my opinion.
Well, they are absolutely gorgeous, and they're absolutely gorgeous for sure, Brian. Tell us, how did you start? Obviously, you started shooting photos at 16. How did you start fly fishing? I know you told me yesterday that you actually used to go fly fishing on your lunch break at school.
I was really lucky. My mother's parents were both fly anglers. My grandfather especially was a diehard dry fly purist, and I knew him mostly in Missoula, Montana. So there's Clark Fork, Bitterroot, Blackfoot, Jocko Creek, all these great rivers around there. When I was 8 to 14 or 15 years old, I spent every summer with my granddad dry fly fishing. We didn't use nymphs. We didn't use streamers. He was a purist. Bamboo rod, silk line, the whole nine yards.
Wow.
So we didn't know any better. And fishing was so good that we could catch a ton of fish on dries and on hoppers. And so when I got my driver's license, I started exploring out more on my own up into Canada, because I lived in the state of Washington. So we went to Vancouver Island for steelhead, and then on my own through Idaho and all over the place. I used to drive down to the North Umpqua when I was in high school in the Seattle area just to steelhead fish. So I had it bad. Yeah, I did fish during lunch at high school. And I don't know in your day if they had it, but we, all the guys in high school, had to take a class called Bachelor Survival, basically home economics for men. And so I'd go out and fish, catch a bass, and we'd cook it up at home ec. It's kind of fun.
That is fun.
Yeah. I smelled like fish a lot.
And you actually grew up in Montana?
No, I spent my summers in Montana with my grandparents, but I lived in what's now Bellevue, Washington, and, you know, a big high-tech, you know, Microsoft's just over the hill.
Yeah.
And but it was a pretty nice little smaller town when I grew up there, and we did a lot of night skiing and fishing, and now it's big suburbia. It's hard to imagine that was available, but it was good then.
So you grew up outside of Seattle?
Right.
How'd you like growing up in Seattle region?
I thought it was pretty good. Fishing was okay. And, you know, when you're a kid, you don't really care. Everything's just fun.
Yeah.
We fished for crappie and bluegill and catfish and bass a lot. And then, you know, I sort of taught myself how to steelhead fish. And nearby was the Olympic National Park, which is world famous for steelhead and salmon fishing. And my brother went to dental school at the University of Washington. And then one of his first gigs was the tribal dentist for the Queets, Ho, and Quinault Indians, which are on the Olympic Peninsula, one of the most beautiful places in the country. And so I would tag along with him and put a sleeping bag on the floor of the clinic, and we'd sleep, and I'd go fish all day, and he'd work. I had a great, you know, lucky kid kind of scenario because my other grandparents lived on a lake. So I had a little rowboat in my local water, and then Montana with my other grandparents, and then fishing all over is just a, my mother was great. She was a teacher at the University of Washington and would, you know, work on her stuff on weekends, but up on some river where I fished, and she would grade papers or do whatever she did. And so I had lots of opportunities, and I could also reach really good fishing on my bike.
That's cool, fishing off your bike. I mean, you gotta love fishing off your bike as a kid.
Yeah. Do you remember what a Stingray bike was?
The Stingray?
Yeah, it was a...
Instead of Huffy?
No, it was the little bike like a BMX bike now, but it had these big, high, like motorcycle chopper handlebars.
Oh, right.
And a banana seat and stuff, and it was... just a famous kid's bike of the era. And I would ride around on that with my fly rod and my canvas creel. And I was just a goofy kid.
Fun times. Yeah. Fun times. Well, good. And then what about college?
Well, I did a roundabout way. So I saved my money since I was about 14 years old to go to New Zealand because my grandparents had fished New Zealand in 1951.
Wow.
Yeah, so when you hear about all the trout bums and this and that and exploratory trips, well, great. But it's already been explored.
Yeah.
And you know, my granddad was there in 51. I went in 73, and people think that's really, really early. When were you born?
70.
So I was in New Zealand when you were 3.
Yeah.
So... there's been a lot of trout bums out there doing it. So I wanted to go to New Zealand for 3 years and then come back and go to Oregon State in a fish and wildlife program. But then I stayed 6 months. And then, well, actually, I got caught at 11 months with overstaying my visa, and I got kicked out to Australia. And then that opened up a whole new cool adventure. So I stayed there about 5 months and on and on and on. Ended up in Alaska. And then I finally went to Oregon State. And then also I went to school in Bend, Oregon, at Central Oregon. Once I discovered Bend in the 70s, it was utopia. I just said, this is it. This is the Deschutes River. It's skiing at Mount Bachelor. You know, it was just a really cool place. And I sort of put down roots there and have been in that area almost ever since. A few side trips.
Yeah. And then how did you get into the industry?
Well, I worked at a sporting goods store and then segued that into some guiding on the Deschutes and the North Umpqua and the Klamath in California. And then from there, I got some job offers to guide in Alaska. So I went up there for a couple of years, and I fished with Dennis Black, who had Umpqua Feather Merchants at the time. Now it's called Umpqua. And I made a deal with myself to quit on my 30th birthday to go and do another endeavor of some sort. Got in contact with Dennis, and he needed a rep for his company, and I started repping in the Northwest, the Northern Rockies, and Alaska. And that led into working for Orvis and later Sims, later Patagonia, Scott Rod, Scientific Angler, you name it. It was a great run of being on the road, working with fly shops, and actually fishing a lot too. So that was good.
Sounds incredible.
Yeah.
And you mentioned at the beginning you're here at the booth of 11 Experience. Why don't you tell our listeners about 11 Experience?
Sure. It's been around about 5 years. It's a company that owns lodges and motherships. So very nice high-end fly fishing lodges in Chile and Iceland and Colorado, motherships in the Bahamas, motherships in Florida. And a growing company. They probably have 200 employees, except not many anglers here at even this show have heard of them. And this is the first year they've done shows, and they've got a nice 57-page brochure. So we're kind of getting out and about, introducing the brand to more people. It's just really beautiful stuff. I mean, it's just state-of-the-art. Well, for instance, in Chile, you use a helicopter to access some really, really wild water. The fishing lodge in Iceland doubles as a heli-ski lodge in the winter. It's just a neat environment, a lot of really talented people I work with, and we've got great products, and now we just have to get people exposed to them.
Yeah, when I first found out you guys did heli fly fishing, it was at the last show. I was talking to one of your partners there, and it's incredible just to think about going to a place like Chile and knowing that your fly fishing will start with a helicopter trip is pretty incredible.
Yeah, it's so neat because that's some of the best scenery in the world, in Patagonia, and the mountains and valleys and glaciers and lakes and rivers. And you may only need to go 10 or 15 minutes, and that's two watersheds away. But in that time, your eyeballs are just bugging out of your head because the scenery in the helicopter is just unbelievable. So I sometimes even wish the ride in the helicopter was a little longer.
Yeah.
Even because 10 minutes, you can cover so much ground. But it's handy because you can go 10 minutes with these two guys and a guide, come back, pick up two more, go over here, go over there. And the helicopter's only in the air an hour, but you've put six anglers on three unique, very remote places to fish.
Yeah, so it's almost like two major destination trips at the same time because you get your fly fishing, but now you're up so many feet on the helicopter and actually seeing all this beautiful landscape and scenery. That's almost like a whole bonus.
Oh man, it's unbelievable. In fact, I enjoyed that in Alaska too, flying in those old de Havilland Beaver float planes because they fly low and slow. And as you're going somewhere, you can look at moose and wolf and caribou and bear and tundra swans. And it was such a neat deal. I think that's just like a road trip here. You know,
right.
It's half the fun is getting there and having, great stuff to look at.
Where are some of the other destinations that 11 Experience goes?
Well, northern Iceland on the Kola Peninsula. It's Atlantic salmon and char. And then we fish some lakes for brown trout also. And it's spectacular scenery up there, too. It's just the greenest of green, really pretty mountains. And, of course, the famous hot springs and waterfalls that make Iceland such a big tourist destination. So we combine all that stuff, the beautiful scenery, in an amazing lodge. You have to really see it to believe it. It's called Deplar Farm Lodge, and it's on their website, 11experience.com. You know, it's got the natural hot spring coming up in the lodge into an indoor pool that flows out to the outdoor pool. Really, really beautiful and really nice fishing. Then there's a new lodge in Chile, Rio Plena, and it's being remodeled right now, and it'll be another just gorgeous, beautiful lodge. And it has the helicopter fishing, plus jet boat and raft and drift boat, everything that you need. There's a great lodge. It's just a classic, almost like a Yellowstone National Park, beautiful lodge, and that's up in Colorado in the Gunnison Valley. So they've got a team of guides that work up there, walk wade trips and drift boat trips and Black Canyon of the Gunnison trips, which are extremely rare to get. It's a hard place to get into. So we've got those for land-based operations and new ones coming, and the motherships. So people book up the boat and stay on the boat for 3, 4, 5 days in a great place like Andros Island or a great place like the Everglades or the marsh in Louisiana for redfish.
Oh, I know Louisiana fishing is amazing. The redfish in Louisiana is like world class.
It's unbelievable, especially in those winter months when you get the 20 and 30 pounders.
Yeah, I was able to do that once and I couldn't believe the size of the fish.
Beautiful stuff.
Well, that sounds awesome. What is next for Catch Magazine?
Well, I always say we. I just like being a contributor. Well, I like being part of it. I'm proud of it. Just keep finding great photography and great photographers. Todd's got new videos ready to roll. And, we don't plan stuff way, way in advance. We like to keep stuff really fresh. So when you see a video in Catch Magazine, it was probably shot 2 or 3 months earlier.
No joke.
So these aren't things that are, rolled over year after year and they come, this is fresh, new stuff as it happened. So
that's wild.
That's kind of our MO of keeping stuff happening right now. We do a couple retro photo essays, once in a while because it's fun. Someone like Valentine Atkinson, anytime you can see his really great photography from the 60s or 70s or 80s, it's just classic. That's kind of fun. But the rest of the stuff is current, really new, fresh stuff.
And then how can somebody subscribe?
Well, you just get online to www.catchmagazine.net. And page through a couple pages, and there will be a subscription page.
Coming up.
Yep, and you just easily sign up for $12 for 6 issues.
That's not a bad deal.
No, man, it's super good deal because 6 videos from Todd is, I think it's worth a lot more than that.
Yeah, and they're fun. And then how can somebody find you? How can they connect with you if they have questions about what you're up to?
Okay, well, I've got a website. It's brianokeephphotography.com.
Okay.
And it's a very simple. It's like a living business card. I don't have all my photos in one spot. I put up maybe 100 favorites and list of places I go. So if, say, a magazine wanted to get pictures from Sierra Leone. Yeah, okay, I've been to Sierra Leone or Tonga or somewhere like that.
Yeah.
Bikini Atoll. There's all that information on there. And just a lot of pretty pictures and fun stuff. BrianOKeephPhotography.com.
Sounds awesome. And then also 11 Experience.
11experience.com. and then click on 11 angling or anything fishing related, because we have the ski side and the fishing side.
Sounds super fun. Well, I am going to be checking that out for sure.
Good.
Brian, it's been a blast to have you on the pod.
Thank you, Rob. My pleasure.
And we look forward to getting out in the water with you someday soon.
I'd love that.
You've been listening to Fly Fishing Journeys with your host, Rob Giannino. To be notified of new episodes, subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, or Google Podcasts. You can follow us on YouTube, Facebook, and Instagram. For past episodes, check out flyfishingjourneys.com. Fly fishing is a journey, and we're glad you're on this journey with us.